Welcome to Golf Origin Stories. My name's Chris McEwen. That's Cherub Rock by the Smashing Pumpkins off of their 1993 album Siamese Dream. And for you newcomers to the show that are just here for Andy Johnson, welcome, first of all. This is Golf Origin Stories, and it's a show about golf beginnings, when and where and why people fell in love with golf. I don't always open with Cherub Rock. I open every episode with a different song, and I like to talk about it a little bit, either what it means to me, the history behind it, some musical insight, because my other passion besides golf is music. So I thought when I started the show, I would combine the two and try to share music that I love, share music that is significant to the musical world, those sorts of things. So anyways, I figured since there were two Chicagoans on the podcast, myself and Andy Johnson, I would open with probably my favorite band out of Chicago, the Smashing Pumpkins, and one of the all-time best opening songs to an album that I've ever heard. Cherub Rock is track one. It was also the first single that they released off Siamese Dream, and it's just perfect. And you know, Billy Corgan gets a lot of the attention. He writes all the songs. He's the lead guitarist. In fact, on Siamese Dream, he played every guitar and every bass line that you hear on that album, because he is known to be a bit of a control freak, putting it nicely. But either way, it worked. He's an incredible musician. But the real star of Smashing Pumpkins is their drummer, Jimmy Chamberlain. Any drummer, any fan of music that knows anything about music whatsoever will tell you that Jimmy Chamberlain is by far the most talented member of that band. It's not even close. He has a very unique style. He was raised and learned kind of as a jazz drummer. And you can hear some of that because he plays a lot of stuff offbeat, plays a lot of downbeat stuff. But then along the way, he was introduced to some guys named Keith Moon and John Bonham. And so he started to get into the more heavier stuff. And in fact, if you listen to early demos of Smashing Pumpkins before Chamberlain joined the band, they sounded very different. Chamberlain really did bring that heavy, sort of more grungier sound to that band. So that's my insight on Smashing Pumpkins and Siamese Dream and Cherub Rock. But the real reason you're here is to listen to Andy Johnson tell some stories. And does he ever? We have quite the conversation. It meanders at times, not going to lie, but we do get into the origins of thefriedegg.com. We get into the origins of his own love for golf course architecture and his love of the game of golf in general. And then we sort of pepper the conversation with other things. Because if you listen to Andy's other podcasts, he'll do that, especially Shotgun Start. They talk about a lot of random stuff. So this is very fitting, I feel like. But it's an absolute blast of a conversation. I'm so glad that Andy was willing to come on my little show here and talk to me. And so that's enough for me. It's enough for the intro. I'll do the real quick little thing where I ask you to subscribe if you like the show after you listen, to rate it and review it and do all those fun things. You can find me on Twitter at Chris McEwen. And Instagram at Chris McEwen and all those other places at Chris McEwen. I'll put that stuff in the show notes as I always do. And otherwise, let me get out of the way and let's talk to the Fried Egg, Andy Johnson. So Andy, to start, I know it feels like forever ago now, but I just wanted to give kudos to you and the team for all the work that you did for like the Winged Foot US Open stuff. I mean, that was just inspiring, just incredible work.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate you saying the team, because it is a huge effort of everybody with Will and Garrett. They do such a great job day to day. And so many people say, oh, I saw this and this and this. And I always have to be like, oh, that was Garrett or Will. They do such a great job. But yeah, you know, it's always nice. Like, it's been such a strange year. And I went out to Wingfoot last year in the fall. So
okay.
I was ready for it. And, you know, given the year, I wouldn't have probably been able to get out there had I not gotten out there then, you know, before the U.S. Open with, you know, a baby and then what was going on in the world. So
right.
it was nice because we had a lot of time and we knew it was happening. And, you know, what we try and do every year is pick out a few events that we think we can cover really, really well and focus a lot and put a lot of time, effort, energy into those events, because we don't have the staff, the resources to do that week in, week out, but we can do it a few weeks a year.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just, and it was one after the other, after the other. I mean, every single, like every time I saw, you know, Fried Egg or you or Garrett or whoever posted whatever it was, like it was all just so good, whether it was video or if you wanted to listen to storytelling, like when Ogilvy's telling stories, it was a lot of fun for me to just kind of listen and watch and follow along. It was cool, man.
Yeah, it helped to do that. I do a fairly regular podcast with the guy that won the last U.S. Open there too. So that was like, you know, I thought about that a little bit at the end of the week. Was like, you know, it's gonna be hard to replicate a week like that. And I think that I saw similarities like Shane Bacon and Max Homa's podcast, Get a Grip.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things is like interviewing a pro regularly, like Shane and Max have such good chemistry on their mm-hmm. podcast. And when they did that Augusta National pod, like the, you know, Max and him recorded yeah. like the Monday night after he played Augusta the first time. And I thought that was that's like a podcast I want to listen to every year before the Masters because of the excitement. And the thing about it, what made it so great is all the podcasts they've done before is that Max now lets his guard down and really opens himself up in an interview in to questions that Shane asks. And nobody mm-hmm. else would get that out of a first-time contestant. Nobody would get right. the insight, the stories, the emotions that Max gave after that round. Like, I thought that was so cool. But, you know, there are those rare moments in time in you kind of start to learn as you cover golf is like where things match up. And Wingfoot was one of the spots that things, like a lot of things matched up well for us.
Yeah. Things really seem to align quite well. It's true. So I don't know how you would do it now, but are you planning for 2021? Have you already kind of identified what you guys want to try to do?
A little bit. We've got a lot of stuff. I mean, we're planning for 2021, but you know, just in terms of, you know, planning out major coverage. But also like we didn't get to see a lot of what we do is go see new golf courses that we haven't mm-hmm. seen. And we didn't get to see a lot of new golf courses. And then also we do events and events were all postponed yeah. this year. So, yeah. you know, hopefully knock on wood, you know, and I feel like I said that in March is like, we'll be in a better spot in August than we were in March. And, you know, I'm hoping by next summer we're in a good spot and we have events. So it's a lot of like that kind of stuff. It's funny. It's like, it's nice that there's not a lot of golf going on at this point. Obviously we have the U.S. Women's Open this week, but, I'm excited that I get to focus on a lot of other stuff at this point of the year.
I was going to say, do you take a breath? Because you do a lot of stuff, man.
No, not my wife. My wife is always on me. She's like, you got to take a day. Because I think that's like the thing that a lot of people don't understand. Like the hard thing is like, you know, it's the Saturday, you know, you're doing some stuff Sundays, and then Mondays you're catching up. Like, that's when people are emailing you, you know. It's like everybody mm-hmm. works, you know, in a perfect world, if you're just covering golf, you would take like Monday and Tuesday off and work
right.
Thursday through Sunday. But, you know, it just doesn't work that way. Everybody else works Monday through Friday. So it's kind of hard. It's hard to pick spots. Like, you know, there's places like I like to unwind. Like my wife and I used to always have like a mandatory Wednesday night date. Because that was like a good, you know, you end the weekend coverage, Monday kind of spills over. So Monday's kind of a tough day. And then, you know, Wednesday at like 3 o'clock, you've done all your pre-tournament stuff and you can, mm-hmm. and then Friday afternoons, you know, and so that was that, that's where I tend to take breaks. Monday, I always play golf Mondays after major championships too. That's like a tradition. You know, take a
look. I like that.
Yeah. You gotta play. You gotta get decompress. Doesn't matter if your story goes out Tuesday afterwards. Like if you're gonna write something, if it goes out Tuesday, like there's such a quick, you know, surge of all the content on Sunday and Monday, you know?
Yeah. 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 Cause you'll even jump on and do a show right after a major, like that same night.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Will does the newsletter, you know, it's just,
yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah. Yeah. Major weeks are, they're not fun. It's no, crazy. If they're fun, they're exhilarating. I mean, the Masters a few years ago when Tiger won in 2019, that was one of the coolest moments. And you yeah. think about like something I thought about is like, you think about just the magnitude of it. Cause like, we, especially during the pandemic, we, Shotgun Start, one of my podcasts, we started doing these spotlights where they dove into.
So good. I had that on my list. Those were so great, man.
But we're, you know, what we're doing is we're reading all the old SI game stories, right. we're New York Times game stories. Like, you know, it's funny because like I've read so much of all these great writers that I grew up reading some of, I read Sports Illustrated, but not religiously or the way I read mm-hmm. it now. When I read these old stories, and it's funny because like I was thinking about that is like, you know, maybe 30 years from now, people are going to listen to some of these pods to know what happened. I hope not, because they'll just listen to a bunch of nonsense. But it's that's the cool thing with majors. The majors, I mean. It's so much work. It's so rewarding when they're over. And it's neat because like, it's when you have the most eyeballs, most ears listening,
sure.
everything. So, you know, they're crazy weeks though.
So I wanted to ask, do you consider yourself part of golf media now?
I mean, I think I am. We get news. We break some news.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm like traditional golf media. I'm not interested in writing like the gamers.
Right.
And I don't think like we'll ever hire someone at the Fried Egg to write gamers. Just because, you know, I think the landscape's changed. Like any, you know, it's, but yeah, I'd consider myself golf media. I mean, okay.
I was just curious. I was just curious because it didn't really start that way, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, when I started it, I wanted to build a golf media company. I came from tech media. I worked for this company called Built In that has mm-hmm. these various sites across the country. And I did business development. I was like a head of business development over there. That's where I learned all about media. Now, I was a horrible writer. And I'm not a good public speaker. I use fillers. I apologize to everybody listening, as I just used one right there. But but I didn't know if I could do that. I thought I knew how to build a media company. And then it turns out now the stuff that I hate doing is like the business stuff that I thought would be my bread and butter when I started it. And what I want to do more of is the media stuff and creating content. So it's funny how that works.
when did the friedegg.com go officially live? What year was that?
So it was, it started as just an email newsletter. So it started as an email newsletter 2 days a week. And it started actually today. It's either today or tomorrow will be the fifth anniversary. So
is that right?
December 8th or December 9th. I can't remember what day. It's one of those two. I got a great piece of advice from a buddy who's a big golfer. I told him my idea and he's an entrepreneur. He started a mobile app company and I was telling him my idea. And he said, Andy, I thought about my company. I thought about the name. I thought about everything, every little detail for months before I just started it. And I realized 2 weeks in, all of that time was just wasted time. I should have just started it. And everything else you could figure out. He's like, so my advice is it sounds like you got an idea. Just write one newsletter and see what happens. So I wrote one newsletter and I sent it to 10 people and I asked them what they thought. And resoundingly came back, we like it, you know? And so then I wrote another one and that's how it started. And that one, I scoured my inbox. I've been playing golf my whole life. I found every single email of anybody I'd ever played golf with and sent it to that. And that was 200 people that I had emails of. And that's how it got going. And it went out every Monday and Wednesday because I would, I could write on Sundays. I'd write Sunday night. And then on Tuesday night, I'd be up writing. And then luckily, this is the luckiest part of it. It never would have worked. But my wife was a journalism major at Mizzou. When I say I have just horrific punctuation, grammar, terrible writer. And she cleaned it all up. I mean, the first time she edited one, she was in tears. It took her 2 hours to edit 500 words because she doesn't know anything about golf either. So she knows nothing about the subject matter. And she's reading these golf lingo, and she's like, this goodness, grammatically does not make any sense. And I'm like, oh, it makes sense. So it got off to, rocky start, but it got going. And that's the best advice I think anybody could get is if you have an idea and you think it's a good idea, don't talk about it for 6 months. Just try it, start doing it. As long as it doesn't take major intensive capital or web development to start, just start going. And it wasn't perfect. We didn't have a name. It was called the Golf Hack. It was a terrible name. And then my buddy, who I, from one of my old jobs, he called me after he got the first one and he goes, hey, I really like this. I think you should change the name to the Fried Egg because my subject line was your Wednesday morning fried egg lie. So that's how we got the name, the Fried Egg. That's how, so then we switched it to that. We didn't have a logo for 6 months, it's... And then it was off and running. Then I built the website. I realized I needed something that I could get people to sign up for the newsletter on. I needed a website. So I built a website. I want to say I built a website over between Christmas and New Year's that year. And then it was kind of off and running. And then the podcast we started in, I think 2017. I don't even know. The first podcast is missing. It was a Masters recap with a buddy. I recorded it with a buddy who I played a ton of golf with on an iPhone, and we put it up on SoundCloud. I don't know where it is anymore. I don't know.
And then you lost it?
Yeah, it might be gone. I got to find it. But episode one, that's why the furthest you could go back is episode two.
Well, episode one was the pilot, so maybe, just whatever. No one... Did anyone listen to it? Do you know? It was on SoundCloud. So I think it was track.
I think there was 50 people that listened or something.
That's awesome.
I don't remember exactly, but I got to find it. That's a good, task when I get, thinking about 5 years, I'll go back and dig that up.
Yeah. That'd be a good, if you, a forced breath would be just you looking for that one single show. You call that a break.
It won't be good. I'll tell you that much. I cringe when I listen to it. I mean, you started a podcast. Like you're, you've gone through, like, figuring out audio is not easy.
Oh, even from, I mean, I wish I could go and like redo episodes, and I feel so bad because the early episodes, like, you know, I was basically just begging for volunteers, and it was like a lot of my friends, mm-hmm. right, that came on the show, and I should have them on again because the audio wasn't as good. I wasn't very good. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's really true. Although I will say your point too of just get on with it. My podcast idea came to me almost a year ago as well. It was in December, and I hit record the first week of January.
Hey,
I was like, I'm just going to do it.
Congrats on almost a year. That's big. Getting a year. Yeah. I feel like that's one of the things that happens is people get down or discouraged and they don't keep going. And part of the thing with podcasts is you just got to keep going.
It's true.
You know, it's the only way to build is consistency and continuing to do it, you know, because like you said, everybody improves, you get better guests. And then, you know, you become, you know, your listenership, it doesn't just happen overnight. And that's, I think, what people, there's a misconception with podcasts. Like, it just, you know, and even like followers don't equal listeners on podcasts. So, you know, you have to like really build and cultivate an audience with the podcasting. And it's such a cool medium. I was always a huge podcast listener. And, you know, I've been listening to Bill Simmons, Zach Lowe forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought I would have a podcast. I definitely did not think that was part of the business when I started it. Yeah. But, you know, when I go for runs or whenever I'm doing anything, doing dishes, I'm listening to podcasts. It's just the best medium to consume information, I think.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I know Serial and This American Life and like Mark Maron, like those sorts of shows, really, I could just, you know.
Oh, that stuff. It's incredible. The production quality, you know, there's the teams that do that. It's just unbelievable how much podcasts like, and that's the cool thing I think with podcasts is like, we're just scratching the surface. I feel like I'm Bryson right now saying like, we're just figuring out how golf shafts work, you know, but with podcasts, we're just like scratching the surface of what they're going to be. You know, it's like, it's the newest form of media.
Yeah, that's true. Now so you started the website roughly 2015.
Yeah. 20,
take, right.
Probably 20 might've been 20. It was right at the end of the year. 2016 is a better stamp of, if you're going to put a year on it, 2016.
Okay.
More realistic.
Well, so way back in 2016, I DM'd you on Twitter, right?
I hope I replied.
Part of it was, I couldn't believe you did. And like, we had a conversation, man. And it was like a conversation, like in quotes, right? Cause it was Twitter still, but whatever. But, I sent you an IM because I wasn't going to ask the question in public to embarrass myself because I was just starting to learn about golf course architecture. And I did ask you a question and you responded right away and you're like super nice about it. And you answered the question. And then you followed up with me to get my opinion on what I would look for like a beginner's guide to golf course architecture.
Oh, I remember that now.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know where to begin. Like there's so many things. Right. And I want to point out that now, you know, the School of Golf Architecture exists on thefriedegg.com.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel
Garrett's
like
kind
I
of taken over. Yeah, you definitely did. Well, I mean, that's like, I always think that there's like something about building a business is listening to your customers, whether you're a sandwich shop or whether you're a golf media company, is like, pay attention to what your customers are asking and try and answer the questions they're asking. You know, if 20 people are asking you about like, how do you get into golf architecture? Like what's good stuff to read and all of its books that are out of publication, it's probably a good idea to start writing some very introductory materials so you can get, and like, that's the thing is like when you, I didn't think, you know, like I tried a lot of different stuff. I'd always been really interested in golf architecture. I'd been reading Golf Club Atlas for like a lot of my life. I'd grown up caddying at a really good golf course on the North Shore. You know, I played tournament golf at some good golf courses. So I like had this interest in golf architecture, but I didn't think that was going to be what the fried egg was known mm-hmm. for until I wrote something about golf architecture. And like, it, you know, our traffic went off the charts and I was like, oh, there's like an appetite for this. It was an article about Redan holes and I published it on the 4th of July, which shouldn't be a good day for traffic, you know? And it was right. like our best day ever, you know, by a long shot. And so, you know, we had this, we got people interested in golf architecture, but when I wrote those introductory articles, what I saw was that like we would do better traffic on our non-introductory articles because what we were doing was expanding the base of people that were interested in the subject.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I love it. I absolutely love it. I'll go back to it sometimes just to kind of go over the stuff. And then I feel like another sort of just alignment of the stars maybe for your sort of type of media is that the drone became a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you, you're the one flying that thing with all the, in all the videos, I assume?
Yeah, for the most part, Garrett flies a little bit. Okay. But, you know, I thought about buying a drone. For like, it must have occupied my brain for like 6 months. So, I mean, we're this small company. I don't have a lot of money. And right. I'm trying to be really, really smart about what we spend money on. Like, we have a website. We've got our email service. We've got like these, you know, these are, I got to make sure I have food on the table. Like, these are the core right. things. And right. like, I knew what I could do with a drone. Like, and how it could transform the way we covered architecture. Mm-hmm. But like forking out the, I think it was like $1,500 to buy it was yeah. like, especially we were such a young business and people are going to laugh at like, you know, the amount of money, you know, and everything. But like, if you, when you're a small entrepreneur, that money is like, you know, that's a year of email service at that time.
That's right.
You know?
That's a lot. Right. Right.
And we, I bought it and I mean, I think the first video is still up on YouTube. It is. It's just funny to watch. Cause like the horizon line's crooked, but like we, it's like everything like the writing, you learn how to fly it. You learn what you're doing. And I think like, you know, understanding what you're looking for when you're flying yeah. a drone, when what you want to show really helps because like I'm not flying 100 feet up in the air. I'm flying to show a certain contour on a green, you know, or yep. a bump that makes a hole really unique. And that, yeah, the drone, I mean, that totally changed the game. And I laugh all the time about it, thinking about how long I thought about buying it. And how quickly it, like it paid for itself. And I mean, I've crashed like 5 drones. So you know, like, it's like an indispensable asset for the fried egg business is having a drone.
Right, right.
An operable drone. So like if I crash one tomorrow, I will go out and buy a new one tomorrow, you know?
I was going to ask like, how many times have you upgraded? Because I feel like they've really, over the past few years, like quickly have like the amount, you know, it's gone from whatever 720 or whatever it is, a 1080 to 4K so fast.
Oh, they're insane. The first yeah. one, the first one could only go 500 meters away.
Wow.
So like, you know, like a long par five, I had to be on the par five to film the whole hole.
And you probably had what, 10 minutes of battery? I mean, no
it was like 25. I mean, it was okay. always good. I got a good one. I got the DJI Phantom 3,
okay, yeah.
which was a good one. And then the 4 was like a complete game changer. But it was such a, that drone, like when you travel, like my wife always used to make fun of me when we travel somewhere, because like I'd have like a suitcase. I'd have like another suitcase with audio equipment. And then I'd have this giant drone backpack that I had to carry on and just getting around with it. But then this the Mavic 2 Pro.
That's the one I've got.
It's awesome. Incredible. It is
awesome.
And it's yep. so small. That's the thing yep. that it, like for me being somebody that lugged the Phantom Four. I have two of them in my house. like lugging it. It's funny because like I thought I'd still use one of those after I got the Mavic. And it's like, yeah. I have not even opened the case because
right.
It's like, you know, that Mavic 2 is so easy to move around with.
It's the best. I put it in my golf bag.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great.
I just ordered Garrett because the Mavic 2 I have is his, actually. I flew to Oregon in March without a drone.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, but he luckily lives in Portland.
Did he deliver a drone to you?
I got off the plane. I picked it up and went to Bandon. I somehow just forgot. I didn't bring it with me. I forgot my drone. But I thankfully flew to the place he lives, you know? Yeah. And so I picked up his drone and then went down to Bandon. But then coronavirus broke out. Like we were in Northern California. I was going to see him at our event in Southern California, and we were in Northern California. My wife had just flown out, and then like the world had, you know, halted over there. Yep. And we flew back. We were supposed to spend 3 weeks in California, and we flew back, and I flew back with the drone, so I never gave it back to him.
So have you now replaced his drone?
Yeah, I got him that Air, okay. The Mavic Air 2.
Oh, nice. All right.
So I think that's got a better camera than the Mavic 2 Pro.
Yeah, yeah. It does.
So
yeah. You're a good teammate there.
I don't know.
So what do you tell people that you do for a living? Do you say I just run a website, or how do you explain that?
I say I write and talk about golf.
Really?
Yeah.
And most people just are like, oh, cool.
Well,
man chase you down?
No. I mean, most people that I, like most of my wife's friends or you know, a lot of my friends just picked up golf. Like a lot of my college buddies aren't golfers. They're new golfers. And, you know, most people just say, cool. You know, I don't play golf, you know,
yeah,
right. But then people that do play golf, like we talk about it. And then if they're golf obsessive, then I can't stop talking to them. How would you describe it? You know,
that's what I would say. That's what I would say. Although I know my wife and her, none of them are golfers. And when I started this podcast, it was like, oh, that's a normal thing to do. Like, you know, like I just can imagine under their breaths, like Chris is losing his mind. He started a podcast about golf.
Yeah. I mean, that's how everybody says things to you. Like, especially when you start, it's just like, they're like, oh yeah. You know, it's like, when I quit my job, I mean, I think my friends thought I was a complete lunatic, you know?
Yeah. When did you do that? When did you decide, like, this is it? I'm doing this full time. This is my career.
So it was time for me to leave my job.
Okay.
It was kind of a mutual departure. Okay. And so I left that in like the late spring of 2016. And then I took another job, but one of my clients who I worked with at my last job, he liked what I was doing, and I think he believed in me, and he gave me just like basically enough money to live off of.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So I had an investor, and when I say like enough money to live off of, I like went back to like my first job out of college lifestyle from a salary standpoint.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, when I made that small sum of money last a very, very long time. so that's how it got going. Without him, I would have taken another job, and who knows what would have happened with it. And now, you know, you look back and it was like, God, that was like, it was just so lucky. But, you know, I had this, I always thought I had a lot of, I'm a person that comes up with like a good chunk of ideas. A lot of them are really bad. but I come up with ideas, and I always, you know, being, I had worked for tech startups for a few years at that point, and had been part of one, Belly, which was like a rocket growth story. Like it was a Andreessen okay. Horowitz company. I was an early employee there and saw us go from, you know, 15 employees to 200, and wow. and in like a year. And then, you know, I saw the other side of it when it when it didn't work very well. but I had the I had this entrepreneurial itch, and that's how I, when I switched to the other job, then I got to know a lot of like founders of companies, because that was a job that was heavy on networking with tech executives from around the cities in various okay. cities, venture capitals, capitalists, and you know, also, and I just got this itch and thought, you know, I could run a company, and it was, you know, just a matter of what and when. And and I had kicked around a couple other ideas with another guy about starting this other company, and so it was something I wanted to do. Was yeah. start a company.
And there's something to be said for just, you know, putting all your proverbial eggs in one basket, right? And be like, sink or swim, I'm just going to do this. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But at least I can say I did it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it. I would never go back and do it again at this point. it's crazy. It was lunacy. I can't believe, so lucky that it worked. It was perfect timing. It worked to extent. Like we're a long way from where we want to be, still. And we have a lot of stuff to do and a lot of, you know, but for the most part, like to make it 5 years at this point, it's pretty incredible. And a lot of it goes out to like people like you who are early readers. That, I mean, that was everything. 'Cause like when you start something and you're sitting at home all day, like now I'm pretty busy. Like I don't have a lot of time. I'm doing like all kinds of stuff and I'm not getting to everything. But back in the early days, I mean, I was just writing stuff and hoping people would read it, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And that was like every day. It's like my wife would go to work and I'd write stuff about golf, you know? She'd come back.
And now there's like I feel like that now there's like a fried egg bump. Like when you write about like your bang for the buck series that you did, right? Like that was an awesome, that was great. And I have every one of those bookmarked in case I'm going to, like, I experienced Lasonia this year for the first time and it was tremendous.
Yeah. How awesome is that golf course?
It's one of my very favorite places. Going, walking off of 10 and seeing that off of 10 is just one of the greatest things. I just love it so much.
Yeah, and when you turn that corner and you get around and you see it, you're just like, holy shit.
I know. It's incredible. And you're in Wisconsin, for crying out loud. And the round cost me $55 or whatever it was, $155 for the day. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
One of my favorite things about that place is their commitment to affordable golf. Like that is the coolest thing, because that is a golf experience. When you look at like just purely on the merit of the golf course, that is a $250 golf experience that, you know, you're not going to go and pay more than $100
right
on a weekend.
Right.
You know, it's so cool. And the all day rate for anybody that lives in Chicago or Wisconsin or Minneapolis, like one of my I try and do this every year, and I went up this year with buddies, but I didn't like do this, but I try and do it every year. Is I just wake up at like 6 a.m., 5 a.m. I drive up there on a random weekday and I play golf all day long, and then I drive home. Yeah. You know, you can play like 45, 54 holes.
Yep.
And it's like $100.
I know. We went with a group of guys and we played 36 and then another 9. We each picked 3 clubs and there were 9 of us out, and we all went and we played 9 more holes until it was too dark.
Yeah.
It was the best. And then, we went home. It's great.
Yeah. It's such a cool play. I'm so happy that they're doing great. And that's like, that's the places that should be propped up. I saw that they got on the top 100 list of golf.com course in the country, and it's so awesome that it's there.
Yeah. So where you mentioned it a little bit, this love of golf course architecture, how did that come to be? Like, was it just a slow gradual thing where you started to notice things as you played, or was there someone kind of pointing these things out to you as a child, or how did that happen?
Well, I grew up caddying. Something Tom Doak said once on the podcast, which resonated with me, was like, caddies would make the best golf course architects, because like if you've caddied your whole life, like, you completely understand how to navigate someone around the golf course, especially like when you're caddying for seniors or women like who don't have, like, I caddied at Knollwood Club in Lake Forest, which is an Allison course. It's got these extremely deep bunkers, like, and propped up greens. So if you're caddying for a woman or a senior who has a lower trajectory, it's like those bunkers are devastating. And what you have to do is you have to get them into positions where they don't have to carry the bunkers to hold the greens. And it's like, you just start to think about that. And then, you know, I just started reading Golf Club Atlas is like, it's like the most confusing website to operate. But if you if you understand, like, I learned how to read the message board and search on the message board when I was like in college when I started reading about this stuff. And, there's so much information on that website that you can just pick up on and then start to look at. But I think, like, caddying, when you play amateur golf or high school golf, you get to see some cool places. And I grew up playing Lake Bluff Golf Club, which is like a nothing muni.
Yeah.
But we had a great deal. I think it was $200 for the summer, and I could play all I wanted, with the exception of like Saturday and Sunday morning. So like my buddy who actually, ironically, we live on the same street. He started the Chaplin Bags just recently,
really?
A couple of years ago. Yeah. We live. We're the same age, 5,000 person town. We'd get on our bikes and we'd ride to the golf course every day of the summer. And we'd spend all day there. When we were like,
that's awesome.
When we were like 11, 12 years old. So that, but then growing up there, and then when I would get to go play or I'd go caddy, I realized, like, God, there are places that are different than Lake Bluff. And what's different about them, you know?
That's really interesting. That's awesome. Who was it that introduced you to the game of golf in the first place?
My dad. I think the first time we went on a family trip to Vermont. And it was when it was the week that O.J. Simpson. There's two things I remember from the trip, like vividly remember. It was O.J. Simpson. We were at the Holiday Inn in Buffalo, New York, watching O.J. Simpson drive down the road, and that smelled like Korean food. The room smelled just like, I vividly remember that. And then I remember we had this house. We got like my parents got like some timeshare at some, you know. I don't know how they got
in Vermont.
In Vermont, yeah, it was on a golf course. My dad went and played golf, and I went out.
Oh, okay.
The house was on the course. So that's when I went out, and I hit like my first golf shots. And then he got me clubs for my 10th birthday, which was '96. And then Tiger, Tiger wins his third straight USAM, and then Tiger wins the Masters, and I was hooked. And I played all sports growing up, and my dad was he played college baseball, big baseball fan. And he told me a couple of years ago, he goes, my favorite day of your childhood was when you told me, Dad, I don't want to play baseball anymore. I want to play golf. And I knew that I got to spend Saturdays and Sundays at a golf course and not at doubleheaders.
That's amazing. Yeah, I could, as a parent, I get it.
Yeah,
I get it. Because you're just gonna sit for, whatever it is, 6 hours in a chair or on a bench, a bleacher. Otherwise, you get to play golf.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That's how I got into golf. But it was My grandpa was a big golfer. My uncle was a big golfer. So like my family was big golfers too.
Got it. Got it. So has, now that you are golf media, has your love for the game evolved as you've become, like you've become involved in a different sort of way than you were before?
Yeah. The way I say it is my relationship with golf has changed tremendously. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand. Like, you know, when I started the business, like I was playing tons of amateur golf around the state, around the country. And, you know, and then I start the company and I kept playing because like all I was doing was writing. So I had time to play, you know. And now it's funny because like, you know, my buddies always want to play golf and I never play on the weekends. I play during the week. And if it's like, if I'm not travel, like pretty much the only time I play is when I travel to go see places. And then occasional, you know, maybe once a month on Mondays, but you know, when I'm home, and this year was an abnormal year, but when I'm home, I just like to be home, you know?
Sure.
So, sure. The relationship with golf, like, and I never practice. It's just different, you know, like I think I love the game. I would not want to be doing anything else. But when you stare at golf for like 10 hours a day, like right. When it's Saturday, like, and I never would have said this 5 years ago, but like the park is kind of a nice place to go with your wife and dog and kid, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you don't miss a tournament. You sit through every single tournament. Like every once in a while, I'll be like, I'm not going to watch any golf this weekend. I'm just going to, but you can't do that. Your job requires it.
There are tournaments I take off.
Fair.
But the DVR is nice too. Something that I like, I don't know, this is like in the last 6 months that I've been trying to do is like, I've noticed that like, if I'm on Twitter, I'm not watching golf the way I should be watching golf if I want to like really think and talk about golf the way I want to talk about golf. So what I have done more recently is I watch coverage later on DVR and I pick up so much more than I would if I'm watching it live and worried about sending out a stupid tweet, you know, or looking at what other people are tweeting. Cause then you're like, it just takes your focus away from the golf, which is like just something natural. Like it is nice to just watch the golf and not have to worry about tweeting and write, you know, even for me, like writing down notes sometimes is nice.
Yeah. I guess there's, you know, you've grown so quickly and you've become sort of this voice of golf to a certain extent, right? This new media and golf course architecture, has there been sort of a, like a blowback or some kind of like pushback in some cases that you were surprised to see?
I mean, like, I guess sometimes like one of the things that I just don't understand is when people get mad at me, like, or get mad when like you voice your opinion.
Right.
And it's just like, hey man, this is like what I think. And I'm sorry that it might not be like all sunshine and roses all the time, but don't you want somebody that like is going to tell you how they think about something and doesn't just say everything's great all the time? Because like if somebody says everything's great all the time, then what's great?
Right. Right.
So I guess that's like the one thing that I get confused about is like, do you want your critics? Like, do you want a movie critic that just tells you every movie's awesome? Like, is that what you really want?
No.
Like, you want somebody to be honest. No. And like, that's like something like that at the very core of what we do, like that I looked at and I said, I'm never going to like go out of my way to kind of obstruct my voice. Like, I always want to be able to say what I want to say.
Yeah.
And if I can't say, like, whether it be via sponsor or whatever, like if you can't say what you want to say, what are you doing it for? You know?
Yeah.
So I guess that's like the thing that frustrates me the most is when people get like mad, say like, oh, you're so negative. It's like, am I that negative? Or like, I praise a lot of stuff. I'm pretty positive. I love the game of golf. I don't think many people love the game more. Like, I guarantee I'm in the top 1% of golfers in terms of love of the game. But like, just because I have, like, I don't say everything's wonderful. And that's the thing, is like, golf's this just like, it's kind of crazy. Like, when you compare it to other sports, like how like, you know, rose tinted glasses, yeah, golf coverage, yeah, is in general. It just, it, yeah, it's nauseating. It drives me insane.
Oh, if we want to start talking about broadcasting, you're going to miss your basketball game.
Oh,
because I have so many thoughts on that whole kind of thing.
Tell me about them. We got time.
Well, here's the thing. So here's, I'll say this, the biggest point I would make around broadcasting and their biggest miss, and maybe this is because I love the architecture piece of it, but to not have a voice on, especially these big tournaments, that can explain to us where a golfer, like, based on the architecture, like, give me kind of what you did with a lot of the Winged Foot stuff. Like, show me the routing, and or show me the hole, show me what good is, you know, where those shots need to go, why they're trying to hit this shot, you know, based on the course architecture. And I just feel like there's nobody, like, someone will hit a shot and they'll be like, okay, that's a good shot. Like, yeah, I know, I saw it, but like, you know what I mean? And you can't really, there's no one doing that. I feel like that's such a miss, and it's such an interesting part of the game that no other sport has. There's no other sport that has a different field of play every week for these guys.
Yeah, I completely agree. Obviously, I'm very biased, but...
Right, so, right.
Like, the simple fact that, like... I just think, like, who's watching Mayakova on a Thursday? Like, there's no casual fans. Like, it is, like, you're, all of,
right,
your golf...
Right.
Like, you, golf sickos, you're nuts. Like, complete,
right,
golf tragics,
right,
are watching, right, that. That's the only people watching it, you know?
Yeah.
I love that my buddies, like my good friends, none of them are like hardcore golfers, because I get like the perspective of the casual fan from them. Like,
right,
they like message me about the majors. They message me about the match, you know,
right,
and they don't, right, nobody's messaging me about Mayakova Thursday. It's like, so with the US Open, I understand that's a mass audience, and maybe you tone down some of the architecture stuff, but
that's,
you have,
fair,
like,
that's
early,
fair, yeah,
Thursday, early Friday, you could do, go hard on that. But, mm-hmm, like, these small tournaments that nobody's watching, you know, except for golf nuts, is your perfect, right, opportunity to do a lot of it. And you're right. Like, it's a way they could transform the broadcast and make it infinitely. I think it could draw eyeballs. Like, I think people would be interested in this stuff that aren't necessarily golfers. When I tell, like, non-golfers about golf architecture, they're like, wait a second, there are, like, famous golf architects that,
totally,
lay out golf courses? And I'm like,
yeah,
yeah, it's, like, just like building architecture. They're like, oh, really? They're like, that's really interesting. And I'm like, yeah. So they're completely missing the boat on an aspect of the game that's compelling.
That's so true.
I mean, I always have flashbacks when I think about architecture. Like, baseball obviously has all their different stadiums. And I always think back, I don't know if you were a baseball fan growing up.
I am.
Do you remember when Enron Field opened, Houston Astros?
Yeah.
How,
yeah, the
nuts,
juice box?
Yeah, the juice box.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, people were going nuts about it because of the,
yeah,
flagpole.
Yeah, there's a hill in center field
and
the train.
And, and the,
right,
flagpoles,
yeah,
were in play.
Right. That's true.
And that was, it's like, true, that was like every time anybody went to that field for 5 years, that was like the main storyline at the beginning of the telecast. And that's what I don't understand, is they go to a different venue every week. The venue's different. Like, why isn't right at the front of a telecast, like, dedicated, like, oh, we're at Mayakoba this week. Mayakoba's the outlier. This is the only golf course on tour where accuracy is more important than distance. we're going to, and then it's like, then you can lead into like Tony Finau's in the field, or Tony Finau's in the hunt Sunday on a golf course that really doesn't fit his game. Like, we'll see, does power or accuracy win out? Well, Victor Hovland wins. Victor Hovland's a great driver of the golf ball. He hits it far, but he's also like one of the most accurate players. Like, so you can just tell a story. The story gets so many layers deeper, and what, like, the great sports stories are the deep ones. You know, it's like Jordan beating the Pistons. Like, can he beat it? Like, there's years of speculation. Can he beat the Pistons? Can he get over the top? Can he finally overcome it? When he does, it's like a massive story, and it builds his stardom, because like there are millions of people that watched Jordan fail and wondered, could he ever get over it? And that's like, deeper stories will lead to more compelling drama in the tournament.
Yeah, it just means more. Just means so much more.
And it educates the viewers so they understand more, and they're going to talk about it more with their friends.
Amen, man. I agree. Do we want to get into where we have, there's one last origin story I'd love to hear that I don't think I know, and that is, where did your love for Westy begin?
I think it's just... like, so you think about like the golfers that I grew up with, like there was Tiger, and then there's this like pudgy golfer in the UK, Lee Westwood. And I just like remember waking up as a kid and watching Lee, and I hated Colin Montgomery. So like,
really?
Yeah, well, yeah, everybody hated Colin Montgomery then. But Colin Montgomery became lovable like in 2010. You know, nobody liked Colin Montgomery. Right. I mean, like, he was like the Ryder Cup villain. He had the, he just was like, every American hated Colin Montgomery. He killed us in the Ryder Cup. He had the bunny ears. He'd always be yelling at fans. But Westy was like, you know, he was this like young pudgy guy, and he was good, but then like he lost his game. I'm like a sucker for guys that lose their game and come back. I just like immediately love those guys, because I just think like it goes back to the same thing that we just talked about. It's like the depth of the story. You know, when somebody goes through some like drama, like, or some struggles to get there, it just makes their story so much better and so much more likable. And that's the thing I struggle with a lot with, like, the direction the tour is going, there's always going to be young superstars. But one of the things is like, you know what? I don't really care to talk to a 22-year-old or 23-year-old who got on tour in 6 months and has been flying private since 23 and made millions. Like, there's no perspective there. There's no story. Yeah. It's like, I'm good at golf. Like, you know, I don't know. And I think that's one of the things that, like, as the tour gets younger and younger, and I don't want to even get into why that might be getting younger and younger, but as it gets younger and younger and it becomes more speed, you're just going to have less substantive stars is going to be the byproduct.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just becoming kind of robots.
Mm-hmm. And like we might see prime, like we might see just like 5-year runs, you know, then they're 40th, like Ricky Fowler, top 10 player for 5 years, and but that could be the future. Who knows what's going to happen in the next couple years? I just went down a dark alley.
And with that, no, I'm just kidding. No, this is fun, man. I really appreciate you coming on the show. This is a blast. I'm so happy that I got to talk to you.
Hey,
it's awesome.
Thanks for having me. Anytime. I'm happy to talk, and we got to play golf. You know, we're in the same city, so we got to play golf next year.
It's true. Yeah, we do need to do that. Are you moving all of your planned visits from this year into 2021?
Oh, yeah.
Because you say you didn't really get to go to many courses this year.
Yeah, we'll see if we could go abroad. That was one thing we planned to do this year. But if we could go, we'll see. But we're starting to fill out the calendar. It's busy.
Good.
So...
it's good.
Yeah. Exciting.
Don't forget to take a breath, man. And yes, let's definitely get out and
we'll
and
do play a Lasonia day.
We should
day.
Just go to Lasonia.
Yeah, let's
go to
Lasonia. That's what I was just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in. Yeah. Name the day. I'll go during the week. I got nothing going on.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Yeah. That was fun.
how great is it that Andy and I are both just like, let's just go to Lausonia. I mean, that's what, you know, Chicago golfers do when they want to go play a fantastic golf course for next to nothing for a day. I mean, you just drive up north and hit Lausonia. And so seriously, though, if you are in the Midwest or you find yourself in the Midwest and you have a day to play some golf, I cannot recommend Lausonia enough. It really is just a fantastic place. Go and see some of the stuff that Andy has done, some stuff on Lausonia on his website, thefriedegg.com. Go and watch that and you will be inspired and you'll want to go play it. And it will not be a letdown. It's just a joy to play. It's one of my favorite places on earth. It's just great. It's just the perfect sort of, it's just about golf there. Nothing else. You just go and you play golf and it's fantastic. Anyways, just such a fun conversation with Andy. Again, I really appreciate him coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed it. I don't know what, I have so many favorite parts of that interview. It was just great. The idea that this whole thing started with a bi-weekly newsletter is baffling. And again, I know Andy and I both talked about it, but if you've got a good idea and you're passionate about it, do it. Find time. There's always an excuse not to do something. Find an excuse to do it and go after it. And I think, you know, like I had said, even if it fails, at least you said you gave it a shot and you did it. And at the end of the day, that's really what's important. And that's my TED Talk for this episode of Golf Origin Stories. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Again, you can find me at Chris McEwen on Twitter and Instagram and YouTube. I just started a Facebook page at Chris McEwen Golf. I'll put all that stuff in the notes. So you can find me through whatever social media you prefer. And I'm happy to have a conversation with you at any time. I'm just hanging out, waiting to talk golf. So that's the show. Thanks again. Subscribe and rate and review and all those good podcasty things. And we have 2 episodes left now after this one. I'm gonna shut it down in 2 weeks and enjoy the holidays to the best of my ability under the circumstances, and just take it easy. And I think, you know, along with this one, we're finishing strong. We've got Andy, we've got 2 more really, really great guests. I'm very excited about it. I think you'll enjoy it. So definitely subscribe, and I will leave you with a little bit extra. I'm gonna let Cherub Rock breathe a little bit, because there's just so much good about it. I was listening to this song earlier today, and I know I talked about Jimmy Chamberlain on the front end of the episode, but the guitars that Billy Corgan is layering during the song, really, it's just so good. And it's such a great song. So I'm going to leave you with quite a bit, maybe a minute and a half or so of Cherub Rock. Enjoy it. And for those newcomers, if you don't want to go back and listen to all the songs in each episode, I have a Spotify playlist. It's called Golf Origin Story Soundtrack. All the songs are there. You can go through and listen to them. And if there's a song that piques your interest, you're like, oh, I wonder why you picked that song, pull up that episode and you can listen to it. And then maybe listen to the whole episode. Whatever you want to do, it's fine. But anyways, I'll talk to everyone next week. Thanks again, and I'll see you later.